proposal to a kid program, too. Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the House Interim Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency to order Friday, January 17th, 2014. We have a review of LC today and relating to contracts for the management of student financial aid accounts. We also have introduction of some committee legislative concepts, and we also have some member presentations of bills that may be likely to come to this committee. And I'm not really expecting to do other than the LC-194 invited testimony, having a discussion on the other concepts, which were discussed in November's meeting. But I would like to note that we're going to be having stakeholder meetings on these issues, at least two of the issues. The third one hasn't been set yet, next week. So we'll try to figure out what we're doing with the third issue on that. So with that, I would like to go ahead and move forward for one of our members to present her bill so she can complete her travels for the day, and that'd be Catty McCune, Representative Catty McCune. Excuse me. And the LC number we're talking about, I think, committee members, is LC-111. She's done a great job of giving us a little one-pager about it, so if you'd like to spend a few minutes and talk to us about this issue.
I'd be happy to. Chair Holvey, I'm very appreciative of your time and fitting me in early. It does take me a while to get home, so thank you for getting me on the road. My name is Catty McCune. I represent House District 9. And this problem that I'm trying to solve was brought to me by a constituent in the recent past. The interesting thing is I've had a similar problem personally, so it resonated with me when she came. And it has to do with institutions sending out checks that can be negotiated, generally tied to a credit account of some type, that are unsolicited. On occasion, you will receive in your mailbox a set of checks from a credit card company that give you an opportunity to transfer balances between accounts, which is great. I don't have an issue with that. What I have issue with is the vehicle in which you receive those. What happened to my constituent is the checks were sent unbeknownst to her. They were stolen out of her mail unbeknownst to her. They have personal information on them, and that was parlayed into an identity theft issue. And for her, it's an ongoing issue that she's having a great deal of difficulty resolving. In my particular case, what happened is, unbeknownst to me, a credit card company sent me a half a dozen checks. They were stolen out of my mailbox. I didn't know they were stolen, so I didn't know I had an issue. A number of weeks down the road, I got a phone call from my credit card company, asked if I had negotiated one of those instruments, which I had not. And I found out, because of that phone call, that my mail had been stolen, and it had been stolen from a number of people in my district over a period of time. And the gentleman that was doing the theft gathered a group of these, took them down to a local credit union, and opened an account in his own name, accessed my credit by using that check that was sent to me without my knowledge, and I think had a very enjoyable couple of days with the purchases that he made. And he was a frequent flyer, a well-known gentleman who enjoyed methamphetamine in my district. Once I found out that this had happened and went to the bank, got his name, went to the chief of police, went to the post office, it became very complicated. It took a great deal of my time to resolve. Since they knew this gentleman well, they had him in custody very quickly. I ended up in front of a grand jury, and it just took an inordinate amount of time and was a significant irritation, I should say. Mm-hmm. Mine didn't parlay itself into identity theft. Mine was more simple to solve, but for my constituents, it's become an ongoing problem. So once I identified the problem, I went to LC, and they drafted a bill that you see before you. What I would like to see come out of this bill is either notification that these instruments are being sent to you, so you as a consumer have an idea that they're coming, or have an opportunity to opt in or opt out. In some regard, bring the consumer into the conversation so that you are aware that they are coming your way, and if you don't want them, maybe even have an opportunity to have them not sent should you choose not to participate in that activity. Now, I understand that this is a complex issue and banking regulations are difficult and there are multiple layers. And I reached out early on to my friends at OBA, and they've been in the conversation since this concept was just an idea a few months ago. And I would look forward to continuing to having conversations with them as this unfolds, should this bill rise to the level of being heard. But that's the problem we've identified. This is the solution that LC drafted, and I'm very willing to work with people along the way if this isn't, this is a starting point. It's probably not an end point, but it's something that's of concern to me, and I greatly appreciate your time in allowing me to at least present this bill to you for your consideration. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative. I think you did a good job of explaining the situation, and I'm sure the committee will look at the LC and with great interest, and will, I'm sure, noodle on it and have some conversations. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I think it's a great idea. I mean, as somebody else who lives in rural Oregon, I mean, mail theft is
it's huge.
More frequent than I think any of us would like to see it happens, and you do get these things in the mail unsolicited, for no ill intent on the part of the institution necessarily, but stuff happens and things come out, vanish out of our mailboxes, and those instruments in the wrong hands can create us a lot of angst and so forth. One of our daughters, our only daughter, we had some loss of identification type stuff that we've been dealing with her for the last 2 years, and it just keeps going on and on. And just when you think you're to the end of it, here comes another check somebody kites or floats from some other source, and it just is hard to eradicate. So that's point number one. Point number two would be, I want to make sure we honor you as the new honorary captain of the Coastal Caucus.
Oh, thank you very much.
So you can wear your admiral's hat today.
I'm honored.
Thank you for the wonderful reception that you all sponsored for us the other evening. That was terrific.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, rural issues are a little bit different, but I think this is actually a fairly universal issue. My goal is not to prevent companies from offering these opportunities to consumers.
Right.
It's just the notification issue that I want to deal with. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll just go on with from there with the informational meeting on LC 194, which relates to the student financial aid accounts and the fees that encumber those accounts at points. So I have a panel, Mario Parker Milligan, Harris Foster, and we're going to bring someone up on the phone right now. Dana Ronley, maybe?
I don't know how to pronounce that. Hello, Dana?
Yes.
Hello, Dana. This is Representative Paul Holby. I'm the chair of the Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency Committee in the House. And
Hi.
We have you on speakerphone, and so you're in a committee hearing at the moment, or an informational hearing on the student financial aid accounts and the contracts the institutions have with financial institutions that manage those accounts to some degree, and the fees they charge.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and hear from some fellow students here, Mario Parker Milligan, Harris Foster, and someone else too, I think. So we'll go ahead and listen to them, and we'll get you in after they are done if you would like to listen. And
that sounds perfect.
Okay, thank you. So welcome to the committee this afternoon, and you know, protocol is that you would give us your name ahead of time for the record, and then you can give us your testimony of, and talk about the issue that you are having and what you're trying to solve. So.
Definitely. Thank you. For the record, my name is Mario Parker Milligan. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. We have Eric Knoll, the board chair of the Oregon Student Association, to help us answer some questions at the end. OSA is a statewide nonpartisan coalition of student governments committed to preserving and protecting the rights of Oregon's public college students. Today I'm here to speak on an issue related to financial aid on some of our campuses. Since the mid-2000s, when the state continued the trend of disinvestment in higher education, campuses sought out options for services to bring down the cost of their operations. Institutions have invested in companies and services that are able to distribute financial aid for college students for a low cost to those institutions. So rather than students receiving a refund check in the mail after paying tuition and fees, we have seen shiny debit cards with the college's logo delivered to our doors with letters explaining how the no-fee student bank account would work. What we were told is this will be a quicker and better way to get our money. What we soon learn is that there are many fees associated with our accounts. The shocker is the 50-cent per swipe fee we must pay anytime we use a debit card as a debit card. Meaning, unless we use the debit card as a credit card where you sign and your signature, we are penalized and pickpocketed by an account we thought we could trust because the college's logo was on it. Imagine how many times you use your debit card per day. 3 to 5 times, maybe. Do you have an extra few dollars missing by the end of the day to cover those transactions? Misleading and predatory marketing practices like these are exactly how students have who thought they had budgeted well end up with overdraft and late fees and with far less money and more debt than we originally thought we were going to be managing. Companies like HireOne, who make 74 to 80% of their profit from student accounts, are literally banking on students' ignorance and impatience. If we decide not to go with a debit card and opt for a paper check, we may have to wait additional weeks before we receive the money and are charged for that check. If we have a pre-existing bank account or credit union account, we could get a direct deposit, but it takes an additional few days, and we're charged $25 per direct deposit. With the average Oregon College student graduating with over $26,000 of debt, we cannot afford services that are ripping us off. We cannot afford to send any more of our Oregon Opportunity Grant dollars to an out-of-state for-profit bank. We need protections and reassurances that bank accounts and contracts with these financial firms are looking out for the best interests of students and not just those of the college. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And Dana, could you hit the mute button, please?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
We're just picking up a little bit of background noise. That's all right. We'll let you know when you can come back on. I'm smiling when I say
I'm
that.
Good.
So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your testimony, please.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Harris Foster, and I serve as the student body president at Portland State University. Thank you for your time this afternoon. I've invited the OSA Board of Directors Chair Eric Knoll to join me, as Mario has already stated. I am testifying on behalf of PSU students who are required to use the third-party financial aid system HireOne. During the fall term, the Associated Students of Portland State University surveyed over 850 of our peers on their use of a PSU One account, the debit account HireOne delegates to students for their financial aid. Through the survey, students answered questions about HireOne's ATMs, fees, customer service, and their overall opinion of the company. What became apparent from the results of the survey is that most respondents were not informed about the services HireOne offers and the fees that they are being charged. Students urged the passage of Legislative Concept 194 for the following reasons. Students are required to sign a 26-page contract to use a HireOne account to receive their financial aid, not making this decision in a free market. Transparency of fees is an issue for students. According to the survey of PSU students, only 22% of students surveyed are confident in their knowledge of HireOne's various fees. Fees are higher and more predatory than most conventional banks. HireOne gives students a debit card, and if students use the card as a debit card, they are charged 50 cents per transaction. Students are not notified about a $2.50 non-HireOne ATM fee in addition to the standard fee charged at the ATM. Thus, students can be charged $5 to $7 at a non-HireOne ATM just to withdraw their financial aid dollars. According to the results of the survey, only 11% of respondents surveyed have successfully received a refund on a fee that was unfairly assessed on their account. HireOne is profiting off of student loan money. According to HireOne's 2012 end-of-year fiscal report, 80 to 85% of their annual gross revenue is the result of fees assessed to student accounts. In 2012, that was more than $150 million. It shifts the costs from universities to low-income and the neediest students. Thus, those who need financial aid are the most affected by these fees. According to our survey at PSU, 68% of respondents want an alternative to HireOne for their financial aid disbursement. Simply put, students are not happy with the system that disperses our financial aid. Additionally, a third-party vendor is taking student financial aid money out of Oregon and sending it to a company in Connecticut. For these reasons, students stand in support of Legislative Concept 194. Students receive financial aid to be able to obtain a post-secondary education, not to hold said aid in a bank like HireOne. All we are asking is for financial aid disbursement that is fair, transparent, and that does not charge predatory and unnecessary fees. Thank you for your time, and I will take any questions that you have.
Thank you, and I think we'll go ahead and listen to the next panelist or two before we have questions. So go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, Chair Holdy and members of the committee, my name is Eric Knoll, and I serve as the chair of the OSA Board of Directors. I'm not prepared a testimony today, but I'm here to answer any questions you have at the end of all testimonies, as I am working with PSU as a student and worked with Harris to complete the survey campaign on our campus.
Okay, fair enough. So, Dana, you can hit that mute button or unmute button and introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Sure, thanks. And thank you for letting me just call in. Hold on. Can you guys just be quiet? Yeah, sorry. I'm in our union office right now. So my name is...
I have the same problem with my committee members.
Yeah, my apologies. So my name is Dana Rungley. I'm a doctorate student and philosophy at the University of Oregon, an active officer in the American Federation of Teachers Oregon, and co-founder of the League of Educators and Students Slashing Tuition, otherwise known as LESTE. As you're likely aware, student debt is a growing national problem. At $1.2 trillion and growing, the amount of debt students and former students hold in this country now far outpaces credit card debt. The average debt for a student is roughly $26,000 in Oregon, which when one accounts for students lucky enough to escape debt is actually much higher for individual students. Indeed, if we lived in a perfect world, tuition would be free and the state would reinvest to levels commensurate with that of the 1960s and 70s. But we live far from this world. Loss of funding revenue, such as ballot Measure 5, has brought the state of Oregon to be ranked 49th out of 50 in state spending per university student, and that's according to the Euro VP of Enrollment, Roger Thompson. Despite this year's tuition buy-down, this year's seniors will be paying nearly double what they paid as freshmen. I highly encourage members of this body to continue to look for more revenue to maintain and further this buy-down. However, there are things that this body could do immediately to help students, which is to support increased protections related to financial aid. You've already heard, and I'm sure we'll continue to hear detailed testimony regarding the harmful practices of HireOne and other debit card schemes that present what seems to be financial options free of fees or charges to financially inexperienced and undereducated students, when in reality these charges compound the debt students face. This body has a responsibility to current and future students to protect them from these predatory schemes that, while perhaps saving the universities a bit of money, passes the burden onto our communities most naive and vulnerable. students attend higher education to better educate themselves as citizens, consumers, and thinkers, not to be cash cows. Education is not merely a means to an end, but as American philosopher John Dewey once stated, education is not preparation for life, it's life itself. Education is an essential part of creating an informed and responsible community. This body has an obligation to our students, our community, and democracy itself to increase protections of students as consumers, to promote the accessibility of affordable public higher education. And I'm also available for questions. But that's it. So thank you for your time.
And you said you were pursuing a doctorate in philosophy?
That's right, yeah. So I am also a teacher. I'm currently teaching in the Women and Gender Studies program at the University of Oregon.
So I appreciate your testimony, and I will open up to the committee to see if we have questions from the committee of anyone that's spoken. Representative Doherty.
Thank you very much. Okay, so let me get this straight. So what you do is you get financial aid. You've been awarded X amount of dollars in financial aid. So instead of giving you a check for $2,000, they give you a credit card. And so to go through and deduct your tuition or books or living expenses or whatever, you have to use this card as opposed to transferring money to your personal checking account. Is that how that works?
For 90% of students, yes.
Okay.
When it comes to the Higher One account specifically for the contract at PSU, the university is charged a pretty exorbitant fee if they do not have at least 90% of students actually using the card and the account. There is an option to go through Higher One and have them move the money over to your bank account, as Mario has mentioned, but it is a 3 or 4 day delay.
Mm-hmm.
And it is certainly not openly communicated to students who are involved.
So are these for like opportunity grants and for certain grants that you're getting, or is it for all scholarship and monies that you're borrowing?
All financial aid, loans.
All financial
everything.
Aid. Everything. Okay.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I think Mario, you visited my office yesterday, and I was kind of understanding it that the situation in for disbursement of funds, it allows a few different options, mm-hmm. but the quickest one is the one that ends up costing him. And it sounds to me like a lot of it comes down to information, you know, without seeing what you're actually given, it just sounds like maybe more education towards you, the students, as to how this actually operates. But then again, you bring in that point that there's a requirement that 90% of students, so then there's almost a disincentive to and let you know about it, because then the school would be punished if fewer than 90% were enrolled in this program. So it's kind of a weird deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So to clarify on that a little bit, it's 90% of the students within the institution are required to have their money routed through the one account. So once financial aid is attributed to their tuition and fees, whatever is left over is kicked back to them through mm-hmm. Higher One. And that can either be put on a card, it can be direct deposited, or it can be sent in a paper check, both of which have fees associated with them. But 90% doesn't apply to the number of students who use the actual one card as a debit card. However, if you are to select a direct deposit, for example, you have to go online with your card, you have to sign up, and once you go in and you've signed up, it asks you how you want your money received. You can choose either the card, or you have to click other option. You click other option, then it gives you all three of them again. You can use the one card, which gives you your money in a day, or you can select your direct deposit option, which through these steps, all in red boxes, will get your money to you in 3 days, or you can choose a paper check, which will have a fee associated with it. Go through these very colorful orange boxes, and you'll get your money maybe in 7 days. This card has given the institutions the option to provide students financial aid in a more timely manner. But again, because it costs PSU specifically about $400,000 a year to distribute paper checks, it costs much less for them to distribute it on a card.
And a follow-up to that. It sounded also like there was an option to use it either as a debit card or a credit card. Okay, and then if it's used as a credit card, then there are no fees. Is that how it works?
So if you use it as a credit card when you're actually purchasing, when you swipe it, if you sign as a credit card, there is no 50-cent debit transaction fee. If you swipe it as a debit, there's a 50-cent fee. PSU has specifically negotiated out that piece from our contract, which is great for our students, but the students at the five other Oregon institutions don't have that same thing. If you are to access your money, you do have to use that card for an ATM, and there are other fees associated to it, like the $2.50 non-higher one ATM fee. There's a $28 scaling up to $39 insufficient funds fee and unavailable funds fee, two separate fees. There's an entire fee scale that we have here if you are curious about any of the specific fees. But it's an extensive list, and you have to use your card in a number of ways beyond just the traditional debit or credit. And I'd like to also make another point that we receive our card in the mail before we even sign up for this. So the bank is sent our personal information and photograph on this card ahead of time without our consent. Well, I guess the consent is us signing up for financial aid. But they receive our information prior to us even enrolling in the program.
So it would be interesting for us to, because you've made a point that the fee structure and contracts that the institutions have vary from institution to institution. And so it would be helpful for us to actually see some, you know, documentation of that fee structure from each of the different institutions, if you're able to accomplish that.
So Higher One,
I will ask the institutions of that too, but you know, thought I'd give you a shot at it.
Yeah, so the fee structure Representative Doherty is looking at currently is the fee structure that Higher One provides on their website, and that's not a universal fee structure. Each institution negotiates that fee structure within each contract, and those contracts for some nature aren't publicly available. So we're not able to see the fees. The only time we are able to see the fees if they are on a website, and that website is updated with the current fee schedule. The contracts, most contracts, provide that Higher One can adjust the fee schedule at any time without notifying students, however. So the fee schedule we see on a website, and we're published maybe on a flyer in a classroom, for example, may be 1 or 2 years old and may not have the current fee schedule.
So you're telling me that students don't have the current fee schedule that is being taken out of the accounts?
I'm saying it's difficult to obtain a current fee schedule. We were lucky enough to have the Director of Contracts and Procurement at PSU provide us the contracts, so we were able to review this fee schedule on PSU, but not all students have that relationship with administration, and so that the visibility of the contract depends on that relationship, not mm-hmm. on any requirement that students are able to see the actual contract.
Okay. And to be fair, I have heard from a couple of institutions who have, you know, a different point of view or a different rendition of the fee structure and how it all works. So, you know, they're not going to speak today, but we will be wanting to have a meeting about this at some point and hope that we'll be able to get the participants so we can really see what is the fee schedule at the different institutions and, you know, how fair they are compared to, you know, regular accounts and things like that. So it would help if you were able to provide any kind of documentation as, you know, to help us with that conversation. Other questions, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Mario, you made the statement early on that institutions had gone to using these third-party, I don't want to say vendors, but third-party entities as a means of lowering their costs in the face of disinvestment from, you know, the legislature and so forth. And and so forth. So I guess I would say that if, in fact, you did away with this third-party involvement in this process, shifted that burden back to the universities or the community colleges, their costs are going to go up, which in turn is going to raise your tuitions, too. Okay, somebody has to get compensated for their time in this process. It's not a zero-sum game here. So I just would put that out there as point number one. Secondly, if I was a parent, which I am, of a college student, which I also am, who was reporting back to me, gee, Dad, my money's for getting frittered away in these fees and so forth and so on. Every time I make a transaction, this comes out and so forth and so on. My counsel would be, you need to plan ahead a little bit to forestall that if it takes 5 or 3 or 4 days to get some money shifted into an account so you can access it in a different fashion that doesn't have costs attached to it. I would, as a parent, just say, you know, you probably ought to think about doing that. So do you have any comments about that? And just thinking proactively, I guess, rather than, I understand the instant every time we go in to get the latte or whatever, we want to run the debit card through. But if that has a known cost attached to it every time, I would think students would shy away from that kind of behavior.
Yeah, great question. I think the fee structure as it is now doesn't allow students to budget for those fees. So a lot of us are budgeting and know how much financial aid we're going to get at the beginning of the term and are able to do a month-by-month budget, but we don't do a month-by-month budget per transaction. And like when we're getting less and less money each year, like every dollar counts. So having to like budget for like these ATM fees and other fees does put a stress on the pocketbook or on your purse. So I don't know if that's fair to the student or the consumer in this case. I think if we're able to know how much we're going to be charged at the end of the term or at the beginning of the term for a service like this, it would certainly help help folks be able to budget. So I'm not. I understand that there is a budgetary lens on this, and if this goes away, institutions may be forced to make up the funds elsewhere. I get that, but I think there has to be some other cost-effective option for all of our institutions in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. May I also?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that 50-cent ATM fee, from what I understand, is not common with the most banks that people would use in a free market, and we're forced to use it as a student at PSU.
Questions? Representative Vega Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. So thanks for bringing this forward. So back in the day when I was in college, we had a proliferation of college or credit card companies marketing to college students, and there was some legislation that went through, I think it was in 2009, that really limited the type of marketing that they could do for that, but it sounds like they found other avenues now to really tap the same market. But at least with the credit cards, you knew what your annual interest rate was going to be. You kind of knew what you were buying into when you signed up for one of these things. And what I would be interested in seeing is, based on the number of the amount of the fees that you're paying for every time you have to swipe these, what does that equal out to in terms of an annual percentage rate, or comparatively to some of these other things? Because in other industries like payday loans or something like that, when you're looking at fees or interest rates, they're actually a lot higher than what's commonly found in a consumer credit card. So that would be interesting if you're going to be bringing this forward in the February session.
Representative Kenny Geyer, please.
Thank you. So Representative Thatcher raised an issue that I'm still a little bit unclear about. If part of what you tried to do here is increase communication so that the universities really let people know that you could transfer money, and you drop below the 90% of the people using the card, do the universities have to pay a much higher contract? Because to me it seems like education is a huge piece of this here, rather than telling them they can't contract. But I didn't understand the downside for the universities on the expense.
There is a fee associated with it. Honestly, I don't have that exact number right now.
Okay.
With dropping below the 90%, that is.
Thank you.
So as LC 194 suggests that a portion of these fees, if not a majority of these fees be accounted for in the contract itself up front, and so it becomes a cost to the institution, which I think Representative Johnson has pointed out that, you know, would be reflected probably in tuition, which is probably a lot more transparent than it coming out of your pocket, out of your financial aid accounts. And I know that that's sort of the direction of this LC. I guess I'm curious what happens when how is it done? You say in the mid 2000s. I didn't attend college, and it was really in the dark ages. And I don't remember financial aid too well. So,
that's because we could afford to go to school.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I wasn't sure why I couldn't remember, but still. I'm curious, how did this work before, I guess, the advent of this in the mid-2000s for students? I know you weren't in college then, but you must have some sort of sense or maybe you were, I don't know. How did the universities handle this, and how did they charge the students for handling those accounts previous to this system?
Well, I think a lot of campuses are still doing this in-house, whereas once you sign up for classes and you accept your financial aid package and all of your tuition and fees are covered, they'll cut you a check for the rest of your financial aid package and send it to your address. And then you would take it and put it in your bank account and pay your bills, do what you have to do with the rest of that money. And that's how it happened before, and that's how it continues to happen on some campuses.
So you're telling me some campuses have the expertise and the staffing to be able to do this themselves, and some do not.
Exactly.
And could you tell me, in the difference between those two types of institutions, I don't know if the institutions are comparable, but is there a dramatic tuition difference between those institutions that do it themselves and the institutions that use the debit card system?
I honestly don't believe there's a comparable difference, Chair Holdy. I think we're in the middle of a phase of transitioning from paper checks and all institutions using paper checks to institutions moving toward third-party financial aid disbursement systems. So I don't think we're at the end of the road, and I don't think there's a clear difference between the two. We're just in that transition period where some have decided to move forward with this before others have, because whether we look back in the mid-2000s, around 2007, 2008, a couple of years ago, we've seen our institutions, community colleges, or universities be in very different budget situations. And enrollment drops or increases have hit institutions at different times, depending on the regions they're in or how urban or rural they are. So I believe these changes have been the result of financial financial situations rather than institution types or differences in how they wish to run their financial aid.
So I got one more. You know, you go back to this paper check system. Does PSU or any other institution you're aware of actually do an electronic funds transfer to your separate account without going through HireOne? Are they able to accomplish that themselves without the third party?
Not that I know of. The reason paper checks are so expensive is not because of the paper themselves, but because of the labor involved in doing that. And the labor has been shifted to HireOne. Mm-hmm. If the institutions were to direct deposit from the institution themselves, I believe those labor costs would still be there, but it's definitely an interesting idea to explore.
Thanks. Any other questions?
Just one, and I know you might not have all the information now, but I would be curious to know what other states do in response to this scenario.
Is that, we can certainly look at that, and I think, you know, we'll we'll endeavor to find that information too, but if you can provide us any kind of information, that would be helpful.
One other piece of information I noticed when I was going through the website, they said that they don't charge you the 50 cents if you use their ATM. And
yeah.
So maybe it's one of those things, is there an ATM on campus?
How many ATMs do you all have?
We have four.
Okay.
They're all inside, though. So one
all
concern
inside, yeah.
That is interesting during the winter break, for example, when buildings are locked down for a certain number of weeks, you can't get in to get to your ATM, and then it's the $2.50 ATM fee in addition.
Mm-hmm.
So for a number of weeks, you have to withdraw from an ATM that is not in the institution and then get the ATM fee itself, if that's what you were referring to.
Yeah.
And if I may add, PSU has four ATMs. However, Mount Hood Community College, Rogue Community College, Lane Community College, I'll have one or two ATMs. Southern Oregon and OIT both only have one as well. So it depends on how the contract was created with each institution, but all institutions in Oregon that have contracted with Higher One besides PSU have one, no more than two ATMs, and they are all inside and very small, don't hold a lot of cash either.
Okay. So I got a phone call from a student who said that they had a problem because the financial aid comes out and there's a huge lines at the ATM and then it runs out of money. Is that a true, has that happened in your knowledge?
Absolutely. At the beginning of every term, the ATM that's directly outside of our student government office is out within a day. And then it doesn't come back up for a couple of days. At least that's what I've seen.
Well, any other questions? And I know that I'm not even sure if Dana's still there. It's easy to forget somebody that's on a speakerphone.
I'm here. It's fine.
Do you have any other comments? We didn't really direct any questions at you specifically.
No, I don't. I think that Mario and I don't know who else. I don't recall the name of who else is there, but I think they've done a great job kind of addressing what the issue is. So I don't really have anything else to add.
All right.
What they said.
Well, thank you very much for taking some time this afternoon and joining our committee.
Absolutely. Thank you for letting me call in. Instead, it would have been a nightmare trying to get to Salem today. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's always a nightmare. Well, any other final comments you'd like to make, and you know, we'll try to figure out what our next steps are.
I just thank you very much for your time, and that we look forward to working with you on this.
The final comment I would like to make is in reference to the cost shifting to the institution. I would like to note that when the institutions did shift the cost to the third-party financial aid system, they didn't lower our tuition as a result. We're looking at a third-party disbursement company that targets the neediest students in our institutions and those with low income, and as a result, traditionally marginalized communities who have been more susceptible to a low-income status. And so even if we did move the cost back to the institution, we're spreading the cost out among all students rather than targeting the neediest students that are trying to receive an education.
And I appreciate that, but I will make a comment, you know, because I have heard concerns from a couple of the institutions, and one of the concerns was some of the neediest students can't get bank accounts. And I don't know how large of a population that is, but and evidently Financial One does guarantee that they'll have accounts for the neediest students who can't obtain bank accounts themselves. So there's a little niche there that they're expressing that there may be a need for a system like this as well. So I don't know if you have a comment about that.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, Chair Holvey.
I think he has an answer.
That is something that I have definitely wanted to comment upon. 98% of students have bank accounts, 98 to 99, at PSU, according to the survey done in 2009. That number has increased since the point at which they got Higher One. And the need was expressed, yes, that they needed bank accounts for the neediest students. But the amount of bank accounts that are non-Higher One accounts has gone up and is now between 98 and 99%. So the need is lessening.
So this is a problem Higher One fees are perceived to be a problem for 2% of the PSU students, is what you're saying?
I think that's absolutely correct. The problem isn't the fact that students now have a new bank account, that their money is routed through. The fact is they're charged fees that aren't transparent and are, if I may use the term, predatory, based on the lack of information available.
Okay. Looks like I don't see any other questions. And one more?
Clarify, 98% of students before they went to PSU or during when they went to PSU. Okay. From what I understand, it wasn't necessarily saying that students only had an outside bank account and had it direct deposited from the Hire One account. That's not what I meant to say, is that only 2% of students actually use the Hire One account. That is, it meant that either they have one outside or they have had one outside in the past, from what I understand, was the survey language.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can work on clarifying that statement for us, because you've confused me a little bit about that. But so we'll give you an opportunity to fix that statement in writing, perhaps, so it's a little more understandable for me, because it's not computing with me too well.
So are we going to have like a public hearing like we usually do with bills?
That is a potential, yes. So we're going to try to get some groups together to talk about this issue too. So I hope to engage you further on all three of you, actually, or four of you potentially, if she's still there. Oh, so we'll have that conversation. I might as well mention that now. We have not picked a particular date for having a conversation with some of the institutions, and I need to do a little bit more outreach. I have talked to a few and talked to some others about this as well. So I do want to get some other people in to talk about this scenario and provide us what the contracts are. It'd be very, very important for us to see what the fee structure is like at the different campuses. That would be helpful. So,
and what the communication about it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there should be some communication. So keep noodling on it, and we'll send an email out. Hopefully we have all three of their emails. We'll get them from you after committee, hopefully. And we'll endeavor to try to put something together next week, perhaps. Availability may be an issue for some. And if it doesn't happen next week, I've got one other week that I will have to, wrap up some discussions on this, and we'll figure out where we go from here. Certainly, I recognize that the LC appears to me to need some amending already, so we'll want to have that kind of a discussion in a broader context and give the institutions an opportunity as well. So thanks again for bringing the issue forward. Thanks for participating in your government, and thanks for trying to stand up for what you believe is a good thing for students.
Thank you.
So, committee members, left on our agenda, we need to open up a work session.
We need you to stay.
Oh, do we?
I'm trying to get the email.
That's all I need. So we'll open up a work session for the purpose of introduction of committee legislative concepts. And we'll go ahead and...
Who wants to...
Oh, you're probably well-versed in this. That's a reminder that a vote to introduce an LC as a committee bill does not necessarily indicate one's support of the measure. It only indicates support to allow the LC to be introduced for consideration in February. It does not necessarily indicate your opposition either. So with that, could I have a motion? Representative Doherty.
Yes. Chair Hovey, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 188, dated December 23, 2013. LC 191, dated January 14, 2014. And LC 194, dated January 10, 2014.
Representative Doherty moves that
The following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 188, dated December 23rd, 2013. LC 191, dated January 14th, 2014, and LC 194, dated January 10th, 2014. Committee, these all three of these particular measures have been heard in our interim committee, one today and the other two in November. If you recall, the LC 188 was regarding the benefits paid to workers during an interim period from a workers' comp claim situation, and we did have a discussion at MLAC this morning about that measure. They're looking at it. LC 191 had to do with the possessory liens, which are on automobiles from mechanics and towers, and the impact that has on the interest holders and the owners of those automobiles. And then again, LC 194, which we just heard today. So, is there any discussion? Is there any objection for the introduction of these three measures? Seeing none, those measures are introduced as committee bills. And next on our agenda, well, I suppose I can close the work session for the introduction of committee bills. And back to informational meeting on the presentation of potential member bills. We had two other requests, and unfortunately, Representative Lively was one of those requests, and he's not able to be here. So I will, it's his bill is LC 207, and did we post
yes.
These? So these are posted on OLIS as well. LC 207, it prohibits a person from sending advertisement for mortgage loan services or other extensions of credit secured by real property if advertisement has certain characteristics unless person has previous business relationship with recipient or unless advertisement meets certain criteria. So I'm not going to try to expand too much more on that for fear that I go down the wrong particular road. That's Representative Lively's L2's.
This one is not on OLIS.
This one, LC 179, is not on OLIS. And we will try to get a hold of Representative Unger to confirm that, I guess. It's relating to waivers of consumer rights. It provides that individual may not, by agreement or otherwise, waive any right that the individual has by reason of law, rule, ordinance, or other regulation of this state or political subdivision of this state that provides for protecting consumer health, safety, or welfare unless law, rule, ordinance, or regulation specifically permits waiver.
What LC was that?
And that is LC 179. So, unfortunately, neither one of the proponents, but I told them I would at least mention them. Weren't able here to discuss it at length, and I'm not exactly sure I'm comfortable trying to discuss them at length because I haven't been totally involved in any of the drafting or of these bills. So with that, anything else on our agenda, Jan?
That's it.
Yeehaw.
So just again, to at least a few of the members that are in the audience, if you want to participate in a work group on any of the LCs that we've are introducing, please get your contact information to the committee administrator, Jan Nordland, and we'll endeavor to include as many as we can. But we do have a somewhat of a short time frame for getting that done. So we won't have a lot of flexibility. And with that, I have no further business. And we will adjourn.
the House Interim Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.